I'm Karen Given, and it's time for Three Stories You Should Know. This week, we've got three basketball stories from three different leagues. I'm joined by The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman and The Athletic's Michael Lee. Welcome back to both of you.
Great to be here, Karen.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Michael, start us off in the NBA.
Well, the NBA playoffs are upon us, but before we get ready for what is expected to be a two-month coronation for the Golden State Warriors, we should probably look back on what just happened. Not just the regular season coming to an end, but the careers of two legends and short-time rivals, Dwayne Wade and Dirk Nowitzki. Wade announced before the season that this would be his final dance, leaving it up to fans and opposing players to serenade him with 6 months of fawning affection. Nowitzki wasn't sure that he'd call it quits until the season's final weeks, but before the truth hit him, fans, coaches, and even Commissioner Adam Silver noticed how terribly he was moving and enthusiastically said goodbye before he snuck off. Recent farewells for Kobe Bryant and Tim Duncan have aligned perfectly with their personalities. Wade, of course, invited the goodbyes. If it were up to him, Nowitzki probably would have walked away the way Duncan did, with no fanfare or public displays of emotion. But in a social media age that has signaled our heightened desire for nostalgia and connection, will a truly great player ever get a chance to just fade into the background? Or should he just appreciate the love fest?
Well, I think he should appreciate it. I mean, who among us gets this kind of adulation? It's incredible, on and on and on. I have to say the NBA gets social media better than any other league in the world. They have the TV show Atlanta refers to as a no chase policy when it comes to putting clips on Twitter. You know, in other words, any fan can rip off a few seconds and put it online. The NBA lets this happen. And I think it's so smart to cultivate this, you know, never ending social media love fest for the NBA. It's just very savvy.
Absolutely. I would like to cede a little of my time to number 44.
D. Wade, congratulations on a great run. Now, I know what you're going through, because saying goodbye to a career that you love is never easy. I've been there. In my case, though, I didn't really have a choice. You know, my knees were shot, so I had to give up basketball forever.
I just wanted to hear his voice again. But I do actually have a point. And that is, I think that it's true. Social media does play into this, and there are nostalgia and good feelings. But I really feel like we are enjoying these moments because there's very little else to enjoy. I don't know how to say it, right? Like, we are enjoying this retirement moment, I think, a little bit more than we used to, just because it's really great to have something that we can all get behind and enjoy right now.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think that if you're a fan of, say, the Mavericks or the Heat, who both missed out on the playoffs, then all you really could just focus on is the fact that you were fortunate enough to have a legend play for your team and bring championships to your city.
All right. Well, the WNBA has a new logo. For those keeping track at home, this is the second new logo in 6 years for the league. The new logo wears her hair in a bun instead of a ponytail, and she's not contained inside a box, which is nice. I actually have no issues with the new logo at all, except for this one. The WNBA is 22 years old. 2018 was an exciting and successful season on the court, but it was still all but ignored by many in the mainstream media. The players have opted out of the CBA, signaling what's likely to be a contentious contract negotiation. Is a new logo really what the league needs right now?
You know, that's a good question. I think you could always debate whether change is the right thing when a league is still growing its base. And I think the jury's really still out. One thing that I think the WNBA could still do is in some way try to capitalize more on the momentum and the growing interest in the Women's Final Four and the Women's Tournament. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a challenge. As we all know, women's pro leagues are way behind just in terms of timing. Most men's leagues have half a century, if not more, of a head start. And in a very crowded attention economy, that's quite an obstacle to overcome.
Michael, what do you think?
Well, actually, I love the logo, primarily because it breaks away from the NBA and just it sort of was seen as sort of a spinoff as opposed to its own entity. And I love what the league is doing now in terms of having its players become more voices in say, men's games, and seeing Candace Parker doing TNT or the NCAA tournament. I think having women's voices and understanding that the game itself of basketball is just something we should embrace, not just as a man or a woman, just as just great basketball players. And I think if you talk to NBA players, which I do, they have the utmost respect for WNBA players because they know how hard it is, and they also respect and admire the fact that these women can hoop. Yeah. Anybody who knows ball and they can respect it. And I think that just seeing women more out, you know, and we can understand that they have a knowledge of the game and we can appreciate it more, it's going to bring in more fans that can understand that this is the game of basketball. You know, it's beautiful no matter who's playing.
And finally, we're going to move on to college basketball. Rachel, what's going on?
Well, Texas Tech became one of the more surprising teams in the NCAA men's final in recent history for a couple of reasons, but a big one was because of transfers. Two of their starters were graduate transfers. That means they graduated from their previous schools. This was great. I mean, you know, you don't often see first-time champions. I think this was Virginia, for instance, was the first first-time champion since 2006. Usually it's the same blue bloods over and over again. So it was really fun to see some new teams. Of course, in comes the NCAA to change the rule or propose changing the rule. They will soon vote on a proposal to essentially discourage schools or make it more difficult for schools to accept graduate transfers if certain conditions aren't met. Of course, coaches like to keep control. They like to know that their players are going to be around and not be transferring or, for instance, leaving early for the NBA. So some of them would like to see less movement. But, you know, I think this is fantastic. I mean, a lot of times, as we all know, college doesn't go exactly as planned. Situations change and you have a chance to go to this rising team. And by the way, you already have your degree. So I don't see much downside to the way things are right now and a lot of upside.
When the NCAA does something right, let me know, because I'm still waiting for them to make a decision that makes sense. Like you said, you know, sometimes some situations just don't work out. And sometimes you have a situation where, you know, you just want to be closer to home. Any other student has a right to do that. And if a coach can leave without any, you know, no punishment is involved there, then I don't know why the players have to be the ones to suffer when they are what people come to see.
I don't know why the NCAA makes it so easy for us to criticize them, right? Like, just consider this. Abilene Christian University made their first appearance in March Madness this year. That school only graduates 29% of its Black basketball players. Abilene Christian isn't being told to improve that statistic or risk punishment. So how can we believe the people in the NCAA who are suggesting that this graduate student issue is a matter of integrity? It's absolutely ridiculous to me. What they're saying is, if you don't graduate within a year, the school is going to be punished. There are a lot of graduate degrees that take more than a year. Mine right. took five, but I was really slow. I mean,
and it might take longer if you're playing basketball, for
Absolutely.
Instance.
Exactly.
Rachel, I think you're right. This is all about control, and it's just another way for the coaches to control their players for as long as possible. Am I really being too harsh on that?
No, I don't think so. And you know, let's take a step back and remember that the NCAA is not just like five bureaucrats in a room in Indianapolis. It is a member-led organization. So very often when these proposals that are often unpopular get elevated, it's because a bunch of schools said, we don't want this to happen or we want this to happen. So the NCAA, to some extent, is doing the bidding of the schools that make up its organization.
My guests for this week's basketball edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman and The Athletic's Michael Lee. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Karen.
Hey, thank you very much.